remarkable instance recurs to me. In Liverpool, now a half century ago, I saw under the shadow of the great dingy street wall of Prince's Dock, an obstruction long since removed, a common sailor so intensely black that he must needs have been a native African of the unadulterated blood of Ham, a symmetric figure much above the average height. The two ends of a gay silk handkerchief, thrown loose about the neck, danced upon the displayed ebony of his chest. In his ears were big hoops of gold, and a Highland bonnet with a tartan band set off his shapely head. It was a hot noon in July, and his face, lustrous with perspiration, beamed with barbaric good humor. In jovial sallies right and left, his white teeth flashing into view, he rollicked along, the center of a company of his shipmates. These were made up of such an assortment of tribes and complexions as would have well fitted them to be marched up by Anacharsis Clutes before the bar of the French Assembly as representatives of the human race. At each spontaneous tribute rendered by the wayfarers to this black pagode of a fellow, the tribute of a pause and stare, and less frequently an exclamation, the motley retinue showed that they took that sort of pride in the evoker of it, which the Assyrian priests doubtless showed for their grand sculptured bull, when the faithful prostrated themselves. To return. If in some cases a bit of a nautical marat in setting forth his person ashore, the handsome sailor of the period in question evinced nothing of the dandified Billy Be Dam, an amusing character all but extinct now, but occasionally to be encountered, and in a form yet more amusing than the original, at the tiller of the boats on the tempestuous Erie Canal, or, more likely, vaporing in the groggeries along the towpath. Invariably a proficient in his perilous calling, he was also more or less of a mighty boxer or wrestler. Oh, it was strength and beauty. Tales of his prowess were recited. Ashore, he was the champion, afloat, the spokesman, on every suitable occasion always foremost. Close reefing topsails in a gale, there he was, astride the weather yardarm end, foot in the Flemish horse's stirrup, both hands tugging at the earring as at a bridle, in very much the attitude of young Alexander, curbing the fiery Bucephalus, a superb figure, tossed up as by the horns of Taurus against the thunderous sky, cheerily hallooing to the strenuous file along the spar. The moral nature was seldom out of keeping with the physical make. Indeed, except as toned by the former, the comeliness and power, always attractive in masculine conjunction, hardly could have drawn the sort of honest homage the handsome sailor, in some examples, received from his less gifted associates. Such a cynosure, at least in aspect, and something too in nature, though with important variations made apparent as the story proceeds, was Welkin-eyed Billy Budd, or Baby Budd, as more familiarly, under circumstances hereafter to be given, he at last came to be called. Age 21, a foretopman of the British fleet toward the close of the last decade of the 18th century. It was not very long prior to the time of the narration that follows that he had entered the King's service, having been impressed on the narrow seas from a homeward-bound English merchantman into a 74 outward-bound HMS Spilipitant, which ship, as was not unusual in those hurried days, had been obliged to put to sea short of her proper complement of men. Plump upon Billy at first sight in the gangway, the boarding officer, Lieutenant Ratcliffe, pounced, even before the merchantman's crew was formally mustered on the quarter-deck for his deliberate inspection, and him only he elected. For whether it was because the other men, when ranged before him, showed to ill advantage after Billy, or whether he had some scruples in view of the merchantman's being rather short-handed, however it might be, the officer contented himself with his first spontaneous choice. To the surprise of the ship's company, though much to the lieutenant's satisfaction, Billy made no demur. But indeed, any demur would have been as idle as the protest of a goldfinch popped into a cage. Noting this uncomplaining acquiescence, all but cheerful, one might say, the shipmaster turned a surprised glance of silent reproach at the sailor. The shipmaster was one of those worthy mortals to be found in every vocation, even the humbler ones, the sort of person whom everybody agrees in calling a respectable man. And, nor so strange to report,